Welcome to this episode of Just the Disc. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays, and it's new arrivals time, everybody's favorite time of the month. I have my friend Rob Galuzzo joining me. Hello, Rob.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, man. I am not nearly as busy as you are, but I appreciate that you took the time to do this for this month, sir.
Yeah. Well, we're recording in October for November, and obviously, horror is my business and business is good. So October has been pretty overwhelming and hectic, but overall good. And yeah, it's always kind of a pleasure to dive into a stack of movies. And this is a fun one for me because I have been so in love with my Roku that I actually haven't watched a lot of discs. But I have such a vast collection. I mixed it up. I have some really cool horror titles. My first pick is something that just came out that I think everyone should check out. And I just tried to mix it up. So I think we got a good batch of movies to talk about today. And I'm always curious your picks. So yeah, this will be good.
Sounds great, man. Let's get into it. What's this new movie you're talking about there?
Well, I mean, it's not a new movie. It's a new release. And talking about the new limited edition Arrow version of An American Werewolf in London.
Nice.
Did you hear that?
I heard that.
What was it?
Could be a lot of things.
Yeah?
A coyote.
There aren't any coyotes in England.
The Hound of the Baskervilles?
Pecos Bill?
Heathcliff.
Heathcliff didn't howl.
No, but he was on the moors.
It's a full moon.
Beware the moon. And stick to the road. Oops.
I vote we go back to the slaughtered lamb.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. We're lost. Oh, shit, David. What is that?
I don't know. Come on.
Come on, where?
Anywhere. I think we should just keep moving. Moving.
It's circling us. Ah, fuck.
What's the plan?
Plan?
Let's just keep walking. That's right, a lovely stroll on the moors. Tra-la-la-la-la. Isn't this fun?
It's in front of us. You think it's a dog? Oh, shit. What is it?
Yeah. It's a sheepdog or something. Come on, turn slowly. Let's walk away.
Nice doggy. Good boy.
Come on, Jack. Walk away.
Walking away. Yes, here we are. Walking away.
Yeah, this is really terrific because here's a movie I've owned a lot now. And in fact, I think this is probably the third Blu-ray release, because I remember there was one that Universal did, and then I rebought it because they had done a quote-unquote newer restoration on it, which did look fantastic. And again, you always wonder, like, do I really need this new fancy Arrow version of it? Yes, you do. Not only does the movie look fantastic, it comes in a really great collectible case, as they always tend to do, with a mini poster, a booklet. It's a new 2019 restoration from the original camera negative, supervised by John Landis. And really, there's so much stuff on here. They ported over Paul Davis's excellent feature-length documentary, Beware the Moon, which was on the last Blu-ray release. So on top of the movie, you get a movie-length documentary that was made by a fan, a perfect love letter. Everybody's in it. And on top of that, there's new stuff on here. There's a new, I think it's about an hour and 17 minutes long. It's a documentary from Daniel Griffith, who always does amazing work. And it's called Mark of the Beast, The Legacy of the Universal Werewolf. And
nice. Wow.
It is a feature-length documentary all about the history of cinematic werewolves, starting all the way back at the beginning from The Werewolf of London through the Wolfman movies, the kind of how the mashups happen with him and Frankenstein, and then obviously Abbott and Costello, all the way through to American Werewolf, to the Wolfman remake. It's just, I love these documentaries. It's one of the things that stands out on any of the Universal monster sets. Like, I always love watching the documentaries about the history of these monster movies. So you get that. There's a brand new interview with John Landis. It's about 12 minutes long, called An American Filmmaker in London. And it's in him in London kind of talking about his love of London, of British cinema, and kind of how that revolves around why he did An American Werewolf in London there. And I mean, this is just, there's just, it's just beyond packed. Corin Hardy, the director of The Hallow and The Nun, is on here in a feature talking about it, the influence to him. I mean, I haven't even gotten through all of it because they've carted over all the older stuff, the newer stuff. It's just one of the most jam-packed discs I've ever picked up. And, you know, it's Halloween season just passed, but this is kind of one of the quintessential movies I dig out for Halloween. I realize I haven't talked about the movie, but at this point I assume you know that it's just a classic modern take, modern for the time, in that the characters are well aware of the Wolfman and the curse of the Wolfman and the movies that depicted werewolves, and yet one of them gets bitten and infected by it and doesn't really take it seriously. And again, if you didn't know already, it's still to this day, I think, the greatest werewolf transformation in cinema history. So you get that in high def. It's just incredible. And there's commentaries galore. Paul Davis, who did Beware the Moon, did a new one. I mean, I'm still working my way through it, and it's already become one of my essential recommendations for this year.
That's great. Yeah, that sounds like Disc of the Year material for sure.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to get this one. It's one of my favorite horror movies. And I will admit that when I see sometimes a title that I've already bought twice on Blu-ray, let alone on DVD and VHS, I am sort of like initially wary. But yeah, you're right. What am I thinking? Of course Arrow did a great job. Why am I not surprised? You know?
Well, and that's the thing. So. It's like they know that too. They know that we've bought it multiple times. So you really got to make it the end all be all, like, epic release that it deserves. And they pulled it off with this for sure.
That is great news. Very glad to hear it. It's definitely going to be mine very soon. Okay, so I went a little bit thematic this month, just a touch,
okay.
Because it's November, so I did some Noir-vember picks,
nice.
Not all of it, but just a few, but I'm going to start out with one here, and this one's from Warner Archive. It's The Setup from 1949.
How do I know you'll deliver?
You and me has done business a long time, Danny.
Yeah. But this deal ain't between you and me. It's between you and little boy. It's his dough you're taking, not mine.
I know it, Danny.
Little boy's got a lot of plans for young Nelson. Little boy don't like nothing to interfere with his plans.
Ah, you said yourself Stoker ain't got a chance.
Yeah, that's what I tell little boy. But he likes insurance against accidents. And when little boy buys insurance, he gets his money's weight.
My guy will deliver it, Danny.
Okay. Now you got the setup. Nelson to carry your guy 2 heats. Anytime after that, Stoker can go down for the count.
Eggs and a coffee. Well, it's getting late. I gotta blow.
It's all there. 50.
Come on, let's go. I said let's go. Did you get it?
Yeah.
How much?
30.
30? I thought you said 50.
You know Danny.
Only a fin.
Don't you want it?
Well, what about Stoker?
What about him?
Oh, he's all set, ain't he? You told him, didn't you?
Why cut him in?
I don't like it, Tiny. Stoker can still punch. If anything goes wrong, little boy's gonna blow his top.
Don't be a meathead. Nelson will butcher him. It's 100 to 1.
That's just it. There's always the one. I tell you, you gotta tell Stoker.
Well, you give me a bellyache. The guy's blowed 100 fights already without anybody's help, and he ain't gonna need none tonight.
So yeah, this one is Robert Wise's boxing movie starring Robert Ryan and Audrey Totter, and It's great. I mean, it's one of those just quintessential noir type films. I know Martin Scorsese is a big fan. He actually does a commentary on here. And it's just one of those movies that you watch and you totally feel the, I don't know, the vibe of noir. I mean, the basics, you know, setup for the setup is that Robert Ryan's character, he plays Stoker Thompson, and he's like a 35-year-old has-been boxer who, like, is always feeling like he's one punch away from getting somewhere, but he never gets anywhere. And he's actually at a point where his manager is throwing fights for him, but not even telling him about it. Like, because he's so confident he's going to lose, the manager will go to the opposing side and say, hey, you know, give me $50, and he'll take a dive. And he doesn't even tell Stoker about it because he's like, he's not going to win anyway. So, like, that's how far down the rungs he's come, which is kind of sad. But, of course, on this particular night, on a night when he absolutely cannot win or he's going to be in deep trouble because, like, you know, I think there's, like, a heavy dude, basically, that's bet against him. He finally decides, like, this is the one I'm going to win. And it becomes this, like, really taut, like, oh, man, is he going to win this and totally screw himself over kind of scenario? So it's pretty great and it's pretty well done. It's pretty short too. I want to say it's like just a shade over an hour. And I'm trying to remember, Scorsese said he showed it to his cast for some movie. I can't remember if it was The Departed or something else, but like I said, he does a commentary on it. Robert Wise is on the commentary.
Seeing this movie, I mean, I just, it's different from, yes, it's different from seeing On the Waterfront or other things, whether they were Irish or Italian. They behaved and spoke the way I knew the people behaved and spoke around me. But there was something different with the setup in that this was a heightening of what I saw around.
Come on, come on, let's have a jam.
More naturalistic, as I say. The Bowery was just filled with the people like Stoker who were really down on their luck.
I'm not a warrior, kid. It happens to everybody first time.
The Blu-ray looks great. It's perfect for Noirvember if you're into that stuff. So definitely check it out if you haven't seen it. The setup, really, really good stuff.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'm not familiar with that one, but I will circle back to Scorsese in a little bit. Hint, hint.
Nice.
But that is not my second pick. My second pick is some perfect post-Halloween viewing. I'm going kind of horror this month because I don't really get to go... I do talk about horror stuff on Shockwaves, but I don't really get to go too heavy in depth with special features like I just did with American Werewolf. So let's keep it going. This is a Vestron title. Unfortunately, it seems like this division of Lionsgate is over with ever since they laid off their whole home video division.
I didn't even hear about that. That's terrible.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago. And two of my good friends there, Chayla Johnson and Gara Setian, who were on Shockwaves to talk about their passion for the Vestron video line, they're no longer at Lionsgate. And it seems with people like them not there anymore to really champion it, that I just don't think they're doing any more releases. Maximum Overdrive could have been the last.
Bummer.
But anyway, my pick is the number 3 release, which is Waxworks. And this to me is one of the, I love monster mashes. You know, one of my favorite movies of all time is Ad Magas Telling Me Frankenstein. I absolutely love The Monster Squad. And we don't get enough monster mashes anymore. But this one was from, I want to say, 1988. Anthony Hickox directed it, who had done a lot of interesting horror stuff around that time. A British filmmaker. He also did Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth. But really, it stars Zach Galligan, who is the lead from Gremlins. And it's more horror comedy than anything, but basically a mysterious waxwork pops up in this little suburban town. And these kind of posh kids all get invited to the opening, like a preview night. And the whole thing is run by David Warner. So you know that's bad news if David Warner's the guy that opens the door. Well, actually, it's a little...
We've all seen Tron.
Yes, it's his little midget butler who opens the door. And then David Warner comes out. And basically, there's wax figures of every famous monster you can think of. There's a version of Dracula, the Wolfman, the Mummy. And the closer you get to the wax museum, if you get pushed in, you suddenly are transported to that actual scene of that movie. And if you die in that movie, you forever become a part of the waxworks. And the idea is they're trying to get souls into all, whatever it is, 18 displays, because once they do that, it's hell on earth. And they'll all come alive for real.
It's 11:45, let's go.
Imagine, if you will, an exhibit in fear.
It looks a little spooky, boys. You think we should do this?
A place that appeals to your deepest and darkest fantasies.
Ooh, scary.
Your fascination with ghosts, monsters, and the many unearthly elements of the supernatural.
Welcome to the network.
Look.
Now this is killer.
Enjoy.
Wow, the glasses from Nutty Zombies from Hell.
Lose yourself in it.
Would you like a closer look?
Really?
But whatever you do, don't step over the rope.
So this is super cool. There's a great Dracula segment, which is a very devil. It's also very gory, which I love about it. It's over the top gore and funny. Like the Wolfman rips somebody in half. Dracula is eating meat that is mistaken for tartare, which is raw meat. It was funny. I had tartare in France, and the only reason I knew what that was because of this movie. There's an incredible mummy sequence. It's just fun from start to finish. And the disc actually comes with the sequel, Waxworks 2 Lost in Time. Not nearly as good because they replaced the lead in it, but Zach Galifianakis comes back. There's a really fun sequence with Bruce Campbell, who is absolutely hilarious in it. And the disc itself comes with a 6-part featurette called The Waxworks Chronicles, which pretty much covers the whole gist of everything. I mean, Anthony Hickox, who directed it, basically, you know, he grew up loving Hammer horror movies, but really they were pretty boring until the last 5 minutes. So what if somebody made a movie which was just the last 5 minutes of every Hammer movie? And that's what this is. And it delivers in that regard. So it's just so much fun. I love revisiting this movie, and it's definitely a standout Blu-ray that you should have in your collection.
Couldn't agree more. There are a ton of great ones in that series. I am, again, saddened to hear that it may be done. But yeah, I love Waxwork. And I like the sequel even, I think mostly because of Bruce Campbell, even though he's not in it that much. He saves a portion of the movie for me, definitely. But yeah, it's a great idea, and it just really, I don't know, it's a good throwback. I'm totally with you. So excellent pick, sir.
Thanks, man.
All right, so I got one more Noir-vember type pick here. This one is from Twilight Time. By the way, speaking of labels in trouble, I hope Twilight Time is okay. I've been trying to closely follow their business on their Facebook page. I noticed they posted they have no releases for October this year, and I don't know if that's a bad sign or not. That doesn't seem like a good sign. But we shall see. Hopefully they are not shuttering. Hopefully things will continue for them. But anyway, this is one of their releases from September. It is Whirlpool from 1949.
I know you, Anne, better than you know yourself. You're unhappy. You're miserable. You've locked yourself away in a characterization, the serene and devoted wife. That play acting is destroying you.
You know, you make me ashamed to be here.
Why?
Because I should have gone to my husband, not to you.
Your husband can't cure you, Anne. He's the one who made you sick.
That's nonsense.
You mustn't be afraid of what you want. It's better than stealing. Better than exploding with neuroses.
You misunderstand me. I'm not looking for a love affair.
Vincent. Afraid of being plied with liquor?
I'll have a martini.
Two martinis, Vincent.
Yes, Mr. Carville.
Did you sleep last night?
Yes. 9 hours. I woke up this morning absolutely a new woman. As if there were nothing wrong with me.
I should think that would inspire a little trust toward your doctor.
May I be frank?
Please.
I heard things about you yesterday which may or may not be true.
From Mrs. Randolph, a former patient of mine who has transferred her hallucinations to your husband's office. Hardly a sound source of information.
Possibly not. But I'm grown up enough to know your technique. You have a talent for making a woman feel close and dependent on you.
I can release you from a torture chamber called Mrs. William Sutton.
So this is Otto Preminger's movie. It stars the great Gene Tierney and Richard Conte and Jose Ferrer and others. And it's a fun one because it involves hypnotism. And I have a fondness for noirs that involve hypnotism for some reason. So this is the wife of a psychoanalyst falls prey to a hypnotist. That's Jose Ferrer, when he discovers that she's a kleptomaniac, basically a habitual shoplifter. And then there's a murder and she's found at the scene and suspicion is pointing at her, and it's becomes complicated, and you're not sure, you know, what he's capable of doing with the hypnotism and whatnot. So it's a fun one, I gotta say. It's not like as good as the setup or anything like that, but I'm a huge Jean Tierney fan, and she's lovelier than ever in this movie. And Jose Ferrer, of course, really, really great in this. And I don't know, I like him a lot. And I always think of his son, who is in tons of 80s action movies, and he looks a lot like his son, obviously. So there's some weird, I don't know, alignment there that works for me. But anyway, it's, you know, Preminger does solid noirs. This one would be a good double feature, I think, with Angel Face, also a Otto Preminger noir. That one's not on Blu-ray, unfortunately, at this time, but I hope to see it on Blu at some point. Although it is a Fox title, I think, and those are obviously a very tricky thing at the moment, being the Disney controlling the vault sort of situation.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. But this one, at least we got out before Disney locked it up. So it's Whirlpool. Definitely worth a look.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited to check that out. And this one ties into Pure Cinema, because ever since Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I've kind of been on various roads, threads, if you will. I've been on a Leonardo DiCaprio kick, which I mentioned last episode with The Great Gatsby 3D. I've been on a Scorsese kick. I've been on a Brad Pitt kick. It's a Tarantino kick. It's basically a kick of everything in that direction. But Scorsese-wise, I went back to The Aviator, which was one of your picks on the epic three-part Scorsese episode you guys did.
Excellent.
Follow through is everything in golf, just like life. Don't you mind? Saw your Scarface picture. Violent.
Realistic.
Movies are movies, Howard, not life. Now the stage. The stage is real. Real flesh and blood human beings right out there in front of you, Buster. Can't look away, can't munch popcorn. That would be rude. Do you like the theater?
No.
Oh, I adore the theater. Only alive on stage. I'll teach you. We'll see some Ibsen. If the Republicans haven't outlawed him by now. You're not a Republican, are you? Couldn't abide that. How did you vote in 32?
Well, I didn't.
You must. It's your sacred franchise. Heard you were wooing Ginger Rogers. What about that?
She's just a friend.
Ha! Men can't be friends with women, Howard. They must possess them or leave them be. It's a primitive urge from caveman days. It's all in Darwin. Hunt the flesh, kill the flesh, eat the flesh. That's the male sex all over.
Excuse me?
Well, if you're deaf, you must own up to it. Get a hearing aid or see my father. He's a urologist, but it's all tied up inside the body, don't you find? Me, I keep healthy. I take 7 showers a day to keep clean. Also because I'm what's so vulgarly referred to as outdoorsy. Well, I'm not outdoorsy, I'm athletic. I sweat. There it is. Now we both know the sordid truth. I sweat and you're deaf. Aren't we a fine pair of misfits?
Yeah, I had a very vague memory of this movie because I think I had seen it when it came out. And to be honest, I wasn't crazy about it at the time. I don't know why. I might have just watched it in the wrong frame of mind and just not been – it wasn't what I was looking for at the time it came out. However, with a newfound appreciation for both Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio as an actor, I was mentioning last episode that – I didn't really get Leo. Like, I knew he was in a lot of movies and he's good. But something clicked in me primarily because of seeing him as an older man in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And it's made me go back and really appreciate his previous work and what he has been doing all these last couple of years. So I've always been fascinated by Howard Hughes. I've never really delved into too much of his history. I just know kind of the peripheral stuff. And so this is a biopic about Howard Hughes, but it's kind of set in a a very central part of his life where he's just kind of dabbling with the filmmaking thing, but really his focus was always on aviation. And so we kind of get, it's kind of an interesting chunk into his life, and a lot of his compulsions and his passion and his drive and the women in his life and, just everything that he, did. And, I understand anxieties and, obsessive compulsive disorder much better now than I did when I initially saw this movie, when it initially came out. I don't think it was the sort of thing that was discussed as openly back in, whenever this was, the early 2000s, maybe. So I don't know. I was able, I guess maybe just because I'm an older, that's the way movies are in general. You get to a certain point in your life and you always see them just a little bit differently. So for whatever reason, this one just worked for me, and it's long, but it's a really sweeping and fascinating story about a real life character. And again, there's so many things about Howard Hughes out there. There's a band that I love from Queens called Bayside. And they wrote a song called Howard, that kind of, to me, is kind of the epitome of, it sums up Howard and how he was maybe a little too beautiful for this world, a little too ahead of the curve that nobody really could appreciate him. But I don't know. This is fascinating. And really, it's a great Blu-ray because on top of the making of the film stuff, there's just great documentaries about every aspect of the filmmaking process. And then, of course, about Howard Hughes, the real guy, and aviation history. So it's just, I still haven't gotten through all of the features on here because it's that extensive. But what I did watch was a really great compliment to, I get really swept up in true stories and just go all in on it, and I want to watch everything. I think I even found some newsreel footage on YouTube of Howard Hughes' crash, his infamous crash.
Crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, wow. I mean, that's what I love, is you can just jump on YouTube and find that stuff. The Aviator's interesting film in Scorsese's latter part of his career.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and we definitely, I think, brought it up on the episode of Pure Cinema, but it was for sure one of the back-end finds in terms of the better stuff that he's done in his last, not last years, but in the more recent years. And I think it was one that a lot of people slept on, including myself. I think I had a similar reaction to you the first time. I was like, it was okay, but boy, I just loved it upon this rewatch. So I'm 100% in your camp with this.
Nice. Cool.
All right. Okay. So I got one that's sort of noirish, a little more modern, but not too much. And that is from Kino Lorber. It is Mirage from 1965.
Yeah? Mister?
AAA Detective Agency.
AAA, that's right. Puts me first in the yellow pages until somebody comes along with Borés anyway. You selling something?
No. You are.
Oh. You want any?
Well, can we talk about it?
Sure. Come on in. The secretary's out to lunch, and my partner's on a case. My name is Cassell. Who recommended you to this office, Mr.?
Stillwell. David Stillwell. I saw the sign.
Oh, sit down, please. Like smoke?
No, thanks.
Now then, sir, what can I do for you?
For openers, you can find out who I am.
Sure. You're David Stillwell. That'll be $10.
Maybe I better wait for your partner.
Now, wait a minute. Relax, Mr. Stillwell. That's what is known as breaking the ice.
Well, I don't want a date, Mr. Cassell. I need some help. I'm willing to pay in advance.
Cash?
But what else? A sack of flour and some colored beads?
I don't take any post-dated checks.
How much?
$500 plus 25 a day expenses.
We'll have to go to my bank.
What are we dawdling around here for?
But don't you want to hear about it first?
Sure, in the taxi.
Well, what about your secretary? Don't you want to leave her a note or something?
I'll tell you the truth, Stillwell. I don't have a secretary. There isn't any partner either. As a matter of fact, sir, you're my first case.
Terrific.
This one stars Gregory Peck and Diane Baker. and Kevin McCarthy, Jack Weston, George Kennedy. It is a really interesting movie written by the guy who wrote Charade, Peter Stone. And it definitely has a lot of that Charade vibe to it. It's got a Hitchcock vibe to it. It opens in a high rise in New York, and all the lights suddenly go out in this building. And Gregory Peck is in the stairwell, and he's on a certain floor, and then he goes into the stairwell. He meets a woman who says she knows him, but he doesn't know her. And he seems generally confused. And then we find out he has got amnesia. He doesn't remember his name. He doesn't know who he is. And so then it becomes this movie journey of him trying to figure out who exactly he is and how or why he lost his memory. And there's definitely some weird stuff happening in terms of he's not fully remembering even the stuff that's happening to him now properly. There's some crossover happening. Something weird is happening. So he hires a private detective played by Walter Matthau to help him find out who he is. And so it kind of goes from there. And it's very much like a Hitchcocky sort of thing without the comedy. It's a little straighter than that. So, I don't know. I'm a big fan. It's a black and white movie from 1965, which was pretty uncommon. And it's directed by Edward Dmytryk, who did a bunch of great noirs in the 40s. And this is one of his latter efforts, but I think it's really strong. And I think it's a really neat movie. And it's got a commentary with film historians Howard S. Berger, Steve Mitchell, and Nathaniel Thompson. And then it's got an interview with Diane Baker talking about her experience on the movie. It's a nice Blu-ray and it looks good, and I was really psyched that Kino was putting this one out. It's definitely one of those movies that I feel like, you know, it's got Gregory Peck and everything in it, but I don't know, it's underseen to say the least, and it's a really good movie. I showed it to my wife and she got a big kick out of it, and she's not cynical by any means, but you know, most of the time she'd be like, yeah, it was pretty good, you know, with whatever we watch. But with this one, she was like, that was really good. Like, oh, I really liked that. So even my wife was impressed, you know, for what that's worth. So that's Mirage.
Wow, very cool. Kino's killing it.
Yeah, man.
Cool. So my next one is, I guess you could call it a little bit of a deep cut. It's a fairly recent movie that just hasn't gotten a lot of play or a lot of talk since it came out. So very similar to a few months ago on our show, I had picked the movie Arizona that starred Danny McBride, because that was one that I felt like fell through the cracks and deserved a little love. This one is from, it was released by IFC Midnight, but the Blu-ray is from Scream Factory, and it's a little film called Low Life.
Yeah?
She's fucking pregnant, asshole.
Who's this?
You know who this is.
Lady, you got me confused with somebody else. Wrong number or something.
Teddy, don't you pull this shit. She's fucking pregnant. Kaylee's pregnant. Call it off.
Hey. For the record, I got no idea who you are or what you're talking about.
What the fuck?
Okay, lady, I can see you're confused. And even if I acted as if I knew what you're talking about, and believe me, I don't have the slightest fucking clue, this pregnant chick probably considered the risks before she signed on.
Well, I'm not signed on. Call it off.
I gotta say, this seems like a very last-minute call.
So?
So? Last minute calls, you last minute results.
What the hell does that mean?
If I had to take a guess, it means that whatever you're talking about is probably already in motion.
Ah. Have you heard of this one?
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. I think Elric's a fan.
Yeah, Elric is a big fan. He caught it at some festival. We were actually just talking about it this past weekend in Knoxville because we had seen another film by Juan Ortiz called Fingers, which I really, 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 really love. And I haven't been able to put my finger on how to describe Fingers, pun intended. And Elric nailed it. He's like, oh, it's like Todd Solondz' Cheap Thrills.
That's amazing.
And I'm like, wow, that is exactly correct.
I got to see that movie.
But yeah, but he said to me, you know what? That reminded me tonally of Low Life, which was pretty bonkers. So this is from a director named Ryan Prowse, and it's so crazy. So one of the quotes on the front from Nerdist says, it's a ridiculously entertaining, worthy successor to Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
That's pretty big praise. I'm not going to say it's even remotely on the Pulp Fiction that level, but that is definitely similar to what the story, how the story plays out. And what I mean by that is, I'm just going to read the first sentence on the back so you know all the characters, because I will not do it justice any other way. And so basically it says, what happens when you throw together a fallen Mexican wrestler with serious rage issues, just one just out of prison ex-con with a very regrettable face tattoo, and one recovering junkie motel owner in search of a kidney? So these are the same characters that all intertwine in a very weird way. And what I love about the movie, the Pulp Fiction aspect of it, is that every act basically restarts from another character's perspective.
Oh, I love that.
So you see the first bit from one character, and you're like, wow, these are some crazy people that are cross paths. And then you go back just a little bit to see kind of what that other guy's story is, who looked kind of like they were crazy and the villain, but then you realize that they're kind of not. And then it shifts again, and it's just, it's a very tight balancing act that's very rare for this kind of indie film. But it's wonderful. I mean, the Mexican wrestler guy, the face tattoo guy, I think I'll give this tiny tidbit away because it's just so funny. But it's basically like this lanky, like, white dude just gets out of prison, and his black best friend comes to pick him up. And when he gets in the car, he literally has a giant swastika tattooed on his face. Oh, and he's trying to act like nothing happened, but his friend is very like, dude. Dude, and basically it was kind of forced on him in prison.
Wow.
But that's just one little nugget of the type of dark humor and bonkers kind of tone that this movie goes for. And the way that it all comes together by the end is just really thoroughly entertaining. So Low Life is kind of a gem that you may have missed out on, and I strongly recommend it. The disc is good. It's got it doesn't have a ton of stuff. It's got two commentaries on it, a pretty brief making of featurette, and some short films, because I believe there's a short film. I don't know if it's a version of this or more like a test run for a similar theme, but there's some short stuff on here just so you can see what the filmmakers were doing before this movie. But Low Life is definitely one that you need to dig out if you missed it last year.
Definitely on my list. I think it was on Hulu for a little while. It might still be. I got to check it out, man. And I should just get this disc, because between you and Elric recommending it, I gotta see it. I got to see the movie. So
yeah,
cool stuff. All right. I got a fun one here. This is also from Kino. This stars the now late Rutger Hauer, and it is Wanted Dead or Alive from 1987.
A hard-working, dedicated, no holds barred,
sleaze bag bounty hunter.
Relax.
We need you. This is a flashpoint situation.
I've been waiting to kill him for a long time. But this time, it's not business.
Nikki?
That bullseye's back.
Would you do what we're doing to a pal?
Who the hell do you think you are? You can use me as bait.
Rutger Hauer. Wanted, dead or alive.
You're losing your bait.
So this is a really cool bounty hunter movie, and it's directed by Shockwave's favorite, Gary Sherman.
Hey!
Yeah. So this is really cool. So basically, Rutger Hauer plays a bounty hunter. His name is Nick Randall, and the big bad in this movie is played by Gene Simmons. So that's always fun. and basically, yeah, so this guy's like a seasoned bounty hunter, and he's sort of is brought in to help get this international terrorist played by, like I said, Gene Simmons. And it's like one of those, you know, rivalry kind of action movies. And it's got some crazy bonkersness to it. Like they blow up a movie theater at the beginning of the movie, which is pretty nuts the way that they do it. And I found like this Gary Sherman talking about what they had to do. Like they had to basically like make it look like they blew up this real movie theater without really damaging the movie theater, and it's pretty epic, the explosion they set off.
Director Gary Sherman.
We have a lot of special effects in terms of explosions and gunfire and
car crashes and bombs, and just coordinating all of that becomes a physical problem and becomes a time problem.
To overcome the obstacles, Sherman called in special effects wizard Cal Acord. Together, they tackled the difficult task of appearing to blow up an actual movie theater in Southern California.
He had to blow it up and then put it back so they could go back in there and show their movies the following week.
Very quiet, everyone, and roll camera. Cameras are rolling. Cal. Boom!
It looks like the theater was completely destroyed, and we only did actually just over $1,000 damage to the building.
But ultimately, you watch this explosion, you're like, I can't believe there's anything left of this movie theater. So it's that kind of a movie that's just got a lot of action to it, and you know, a great Rutger Hauer character. You know, right out of the gate, he establishes himself as a very clever, intelligent bounty hunter who knows how to take down his prey, as it were. But yeah, Gene Simmons is definitely a tricky one. And yeah, he's a good foil, you know, for Hauer. But it's got, you know, a cast of some other folks that you'd probably recognize. I'm blanking on. Oh, Robert Guillaume is the big one. He's like the CIA dude that's basically pulled Rutger Hauer's character into the mess of this terrorist thing. So just seeing Rutger Hauer and Robert Guillaume play scenes together is really intriguing. That's just not, you know, two actors I wouldn't necessarily think would be in a movie together at any point.
What the hell are you doing here?
Well, that's a nice way to talk to an old friend you haven't seen in 3 years.
Phil, friends are people who show up in a bathing suit with a six-pack, not dressed up like one of the Brooks Brothers. This is company business. Cut to the chase.
Okay. Malak al-Rahim.
That's a lot better.
Yeah. He left us his handprint on a telephone booth. We need you.
Give me a break. Between the CIA, the FBI, the LAPD, you've got 4,000 men on the street. Why would you need me?
This is a flashpoint situation, Nick. We need the best.
Bullshit, the best. That was 3 years ago. I'm working my own scams now.
Who's bullshitting who? You and I both know you hate collecting garbage.
At least I know who my enemies are. I hate getting stabbed in the back.
Well, that hasn't changed. At least we pay well for the risk.
200 in a rearview mirror.
Okay. If it's any consolation, it'll be me watching your back.
But Gary Sherman, man, he does it again. You know, just another great Gary Sherman genre film. So highly recommended. This one has a commentary from Gary Sherman and his executive producer, Arthur M. Sarkisian. And then another interview with Gary and an interview with star Mel Harris. So this is really nice. It's a good looking 185-1 transfer, or 178-1, excuse me. And it's nice to have this on Blue, you know, especially so close on the heels of Rutger Hauer's passing.
Oh yeah,
definitely worth a look if you're into him.
I am, and I love Gary Sherman. He's become a friend over the years, and this is one of my Gary Sherman Rutger Hauer blind spots. So I actually not seen this movie, but you definitely sold me on it for sure.
You will dig it.
And I'm going to mention Rutger Hauer in my follow-up pick. It's not one of my picks, but later on. But really quickly, because I don't know if we really talked since he passed, but I wanted to mention there's a film that Rutger Hauer is in that's always had such a profound effect on me called Escape from Sobibor. And it is it's on Amazon Prime, although the version on Amazon Prime is okay. I think I ended up watching it on Tubi or one of these other Roku app that you can hunt around for it. You'll find it. It was a made for TV movie from 1987, and it's about the true story of the biggest World War II concentration camp escape. And I mean, right now the world is in a very strange, scary place as it is. And you need to be reminded of how awful some of the things that Jewish people had to go through during that war, and the lengths they went to get out of this situation. So, and I mean, incredible performance from Rutger Hauer, who basically he shows up. He doesn't show up until it's a little over 2 hours. He shows up maybe 50 minutes in, and he's kind of a Dutch soldier that was captured, and immediately is kind of the guy behind, we got to get out of here. So check that one out, Escape from Sobibor.
Very cool.
But moving back to just the discs, this is another fun one post-Halloween that I think, this just came up in conversation a few days ago. Actually, when we were in Knoxville, I was suggesting they do a double bill of these films. That would be FX2. These are both films are available from Kino Lorber, but I'm specifically recommending the sequel, FX2.
Excellent.
He was the movie's number one special effects man. Now he's retired.
My kid says you can create any illusion you want to.
But a special request.
You want to bait a trap, make him think that the girl is alone, except it won't be the girl, it'll be me.
Has got him rocking with the punches. Rolling into danger.
You'll be in and out of the place before you even break a sweat.
I need a miracle working on effects, man.
With guys.
There's someone else in the room.
Who don't like him. Hanging around.
Hey, Rally. Are you going to hang around here all night?
Great bloody timing, Leo.
Raleigh and Leo, together again.
Let's get one thing straight. McCarthy and I were never pals.
For what could be the last time.
Why don't you just leave this to NYPD?
Because somebody else in the department could be involved in this thing.
So what do we do now?
First, we have another drink.
And a lot of reasons for this. This was, you can watch the second one without seeing the first one. The first one's great. It's a really, really great story, basically about an effects, one of the best effects artists in the world is brought in to create an illusion, basically that a mobster was killed so that he can go into witness protection. And it happens, and then he gets framed for the murder, and then everybody's after him, the cops, the mob, all that kind of stuff. And so they ended up making a sequel, which kind of sums that all up. You kind of can go into this knowing, okay, he's now retired, and he doesn't do this sort of thing anymore. And it's he's played by Brian Brown. And then the cop that helped him in the first movie is Brian Dennehy. And we all love the Dennehy. And basically, his girlfriend's former husband is a police officer that basically asks him for a favor to help him with an effects gag to catch a serial killer. And he wants to look good in his girlfriend's eyes and his girlfriend's kid's eyes. So he decides, I'm going to help him. And it goes terribly wrong. And so it's Brian Brown and Brian Dennehy caught in this incredible conspiracy. But one of the fun things about it is how he uses his knowledge of effects to kind of fight people off or trick people. And in this particular movie, he's got a really fun, like, it's like an animatronic clown that he calls Bluey.
Oh, I love that.
Which basically, he wears the costume and he can control the life-size Bluey. So if you look at the trailer, there's a great sequence where basically there's a guy with a gun on him and Bluey is behind him and he's able to basically kick his ass using his freaking clown, his life-size clown maquette. So this is just great. Directed by Richard Franklin, the late, great Richard Franklin, who did Road Games, which just came out from Scream Factory. He directed Psycho 2 and Patrick. Such a vastly underrated filmmaker and kind of a second-generation Hitchcock. He was a huge fan, which made him perfect for Psycho 2. And also did Cloak and Dagger. I mean, just his filmography is really, really fascinating and interesting. And to me, this is one of the most fun movies he ever made. You know, not much in terms of special features is when an earlier Kino discs before they kind of really did that. So there's a vintage making of featurette and then trailers for the two movies. But I strongly recommend both FX movies, but if you only get one, go for FX2 and, you know, keep your eyes peeled. This is usually fairly decently priced, but Kino does sales pretty regularly. And this is one I would absolutely, you know, bump up on your queue, to pick up and check out.
Agree 100%. Again, I love both those movies. I grew up with the first one that was like a family favorite. And then FX2 I saw later and I've really come to appreciate it a lot more in, you know, the years since. It's a great sequel, and they're both really cool movies. And people aren't really talking about them that much, so I'm with you. People watch FX or FX2. Good stuff.
Yeah, but believe it or not, there was even a TV series at one point.
I heard about that. I've never seen a frame of it, but I'm curious.
I don't know if it made it to Beyond Pilot or if they even aired a few episodes, but you can find snippets of it on YouTube.
Interesting.
Last time I revisited this, I was curious, and so I watched a little on YouTube. Not as good without Brian Brown and Brian Dennehy, but it's still interesting that it exists.
Very interesting. Well, cool. Good pick. All right, so Scream Factory next for me. I am going Hammer, one of my favorite Hammer films, and that is The Devil Rides Out from 1968.
Ooh. I didn't ask you to come here tonight. Even my oldest friends have no right to butt in on my private affairs.
Will someone please say...
I'm sorry, Simon. But I feel like a father who sees his child trying to pick live coals out of a fire.
Will someone kindly tell me what's going on? Chickens in a basket, diagrams on a floor. Do these mean something to you?
It means that Simon here is playing the most dangerous game known to mankind.
Oh, come on, Nicholas.
Well, Rex is right. You're making too much of it.
Then you've no objection if we stay.
You aren't members of the Circle.
Circle?
Society.
If we stayed... there'd be more than 13, wouldn't there? Look, Simon, I think you will admit that whilst Rex and I have been your closest friends for more than 10 years now, we have never at any time stressed our age or our greater experience. Now, tonight, I'm going to break that rule. I'm considerably older than you are, Simon. And although I've never spoken about it, I've made a very deep study of these esoteric doctrines. I beg of you, as I've never begged anything in my life before, give up this desperately dangerous adventure and leave this house with us immediately.
So we have the man himself, Christopher Lee, in this one. It is directed by Terrence Fisher, who's one of the best directors of Hammer horror films. And the script is by Richard Matheson. So that's a big, big plus. I love Richard Matheson, one of my favorite writers of all time. So this one it's basically a sort of a good versus evil struggle. It's like a cult type movie, you know, in terms of Christopher Lee and his buddy are trying to get one of their friends out of this demon devil cult. And so they manage to like kidnap him out of the house he's in just before some big ritual is going to take place. But then of course the head of the cult is like not so psyched that they came over and did that. So he comes to their house and is going to try and get the guy back. And it becomes this real big like struggle of good versus evil, the actual legit forces of evil. And so Christopher Lee is like, you know, one of those dudes who just happens to know a lot about this subject and he knows what they need to do to try and stay safe. But it's a very challenging thing not to get sort of sucked into the evil, if you will.
No questions?
Hocus pocus. Mumbo jumbo. Black magic.
Rex, do you believe in evil?
As an idea.
Do you believe in the power of darkness?
As a superstition.
Now there you are wrong. The power of darkness is more than just a superstition. It is a living force which can be tapped at any given moment of the night.
So it's kind of a talky movie, but it's really got a great sense of dread about it that I like very much. It's definitely one of the best of the Hammers for me. And yeah, it's got more sort of like hypnotism, mind control kind of stuff, and just general, you know, creepy possession-y stuff. I don't want to give away too much. It's a fun watch and it's a great performance from Christopher Lee. And this Blu-ray is pretty badass, actually. This ports over some stuff from, I had an import, I think Optima maybe from the UK. I can't remember, but it's got some new stuff too. There's a new audio commentary with film historian Steve Haberman and film historian Constantine Nazir, something called Satanic Shocks. This is film historian Kim Newman recalls The Devil Rides Out. Now I love Kim Newman. He's one of the great, genre writers and film writers over in the UK. And so I'll take anything and everything he does, and it's wonderful to hear him talk about this movie. He's really, really good. Then there's Folk Horror Goes Haywire, Jonathan Ryby on The Devil Rides Out, audio commentary with Christopher Lee and Sarah Lawson. That's obviously an old one, but very cool to hear their thoughts on the film.
This is Christopher Lee speaking. I think, in fact, I know, I can truly say that I was responsible for this film being made. I was the one who finally convinced Hammer that they could make a film about black magic and Satanism and witchcraft without incurring the wrath of the ecclesiastical authorities. This monstrosity, this idol, is supposedly called Baphomet and was, we are told, worshipped by the Templars as they began to disintegrate and deteriorate as an order, the Knights Templar. This is another symbol, of course, of Satanism as well, as indeed was the preceding one. And now we're back to Baphomet again. On his forehead, what looks like a Mogan David, which obviously has some sort of supernatural connection. All these signs and symbols you're seeing are all quite correct and quite accurate in terms of the history of witchcraft.
And then something called Black Magic, The Making of the Devil Rides Out, and a few more things. So it's pretty stacked up, this one, and I love anything for old horror. You know, the fact that Scream, we've talked about on the show, is doing Val Lewton, and they're doing Hammer, and obviously they're doing 80s, and they're doing contemporary horror. I really appreciate the many-pronged approach to preserving and perpetuating horror love that they're doing. You know, so hats off to Scream for another great release. I love it. The Devil Rides Out.
Yeah, this is, I got to get this disc. This is one of those films. Again, I'm new. I didn't grow up on Hammer. It's more of a thing that I'm getting into now as an adult, and it's been a great journey discovering a lot of these movies. And this is one that always comes up. There was never a good Blu-ray release of it here in the States. I think I have an import DVD from ages ago that I never got around to watching. But I'm just so happy that Scream Factory is giving love to all these titles now. So I'm gonna pick this one up soon.
Yeah, hats off.
Yeah. My only runner-up pick is, and I wanted to put it in the runner-ups because I think this disc is a lot harder to get, but for diehard collectors that are listening, we've all been waiting for The Hitcher to make its way to Blu-ray. I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon just because it's tied up in so many rights issues, in particular with HBO, and I mean, it stars the great Rutger Hauer.
The moment he stops.
My mother told me never to do this.
The terror starts.
Hello, police. I got frayed by this guy who picked up hitchhiking. Do I look like a killer to you?
The Hitcher.
Starts Friday at a theater near you. Consult local listings.
There's a German Blu-ray of it that I was able to get on DiabolicDVD.com. They're great for finding these kind of stuff. And it's a region-free disc, so it will play in your regular player. It's the uncut version. It's Eric Red. It's one of the great thrillers of the 80s and kind of fallen through the cracks just because of how hard it is to get. But if you want an HD version of it, hopefully they still have it at Diabolic. But regardless, even if you go to Amazon and switch it to Germany, Hitcher, a.k.a. Der Highway Killer,
yes,
is out there now. So this is the way to put it in your collection if you want it.
Yeah, I got that disc too, and it looks pretty good. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily remastered, I don't think, but, you know, it looks better than the DVD I had, so
yeah.
I'm happy to have it, you know.
Yeah, until something better comes along, it's just great to have it on disc. So
yes, absolutely. I recommend that one too. All right, so my last one is one more for Noirvember. This is a movie called The Reckless Moment from 1949.
My name is Donnelly, Martin Donnelly. I'd like a few words with you.
Yes, what about?
Do you mind? You'll be wanting these, Mrs. Harper.
What are they?
Writings.
I don't know what you're talking about.
These are letters which your daughter wrote to the late Ted Darby. Price is $5,000 cash. Ted, darling, I just wasn't alive until I met you. But you came like a fresh wind blowing through my stuffy room. I don't know, Ted, if I can make up my mind to do what you asked yesterday.
I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to leave, Mr. Donnelly. Would you like me to call the police?
I wouldn't do that if I were you, Mrs. Harper. But just the fact that you did ask, And that you thought I had the courage to take such a chance makes me feel proud. Ted, I'm thinking about it. I'm not sentimental, you know that, but just the same, it is hard to break entirely with the past.
Hi, Mother.
David!
I got trunks on.
Hi. This is my son, David, Mr. Dolan.
Well?
I learned a new song today. Want me to play it?
Some other time, David. I'm busy.
All right. Mother has no appreciation for music.
This is a Max Ophuls movie. It stars James Mason and Joan Bennett, and it's basically the story of a woman, a mom, played by Joan Bennett, whose daughter, her oldest daughter, who's, I guess, supposed to be in her, I can't remember if she's in her late teens or early 20s, she's sort of taken up, they live outside of LA, you know, I don't know where exactly, I forget, but, you know, like an hour or so, and she's taken to going into the city and hanging out with some less than reputable types, and she gets involved with this, I can't remember if he's a gambler, but he's just kind of a scumbag, and she's not into her daughter being with him, so she goes to LA to tell him to, like, back off, like, leave my daughter alone. And he's like, well, how much would it be worth for me to leave your daughter alone? This is the kind of guy he is. But so she tells him off, she goes home, he immediately calls the daughter and says, hey, your mom's onto us. I got to meet with you. So they meet up and, you know, small spoiler, he's accidentally killed. She is sort of accidentally responsible for his death. Mm-hmm. And so then the mom sort of has to cover it up. And then James Mason gets involved as a guy that's sort of a go-between between somebody who knows that dude and knows that the daughter sent him a bunch of letters that were like love letters. And he's like, look, I've got these letters. This guy wants $5,000, like, right now. You got to get the money. And he's not as shady as that guy. And then it sort of becomes a thing where he starts to sort of fall for her. So it gets really complicated. But it is just this very dark story of blackmail and a mother, you know, trying to protect her daughter. And it's a tough one, but good. And a good James Mason performance. And I like Joan Bennett a lot. This is the Indicator All Regions set, and it's got a ton of extras. But the one I'm going to highlight is something called Maternal Overdrive. And it is Todd Haynes, writer-director Todd Haynes, talking about this movie, which apparently is one of his favorite films. So it's like a 23-minute talk with him sort of, you know, going through what he loves about the movie and how he took some things from it for some of his movies, including Far From Heaven.
The Reckless Moment is a film that, while being in many ways sort of the great lost Ophuls film from his later work, surrounded by very well-known films on both sides, it has affected many filmmakers like myself. I sort of brazenly borrow from it in my film Far From Heaven, and in fact named the housekeeper in that film, Sybil, after the character in The Reckless Moment, but also a more complete remake called The Deep End, starring Tilda Swinton, came out a couple years ago, and basically updated the story, but follows it pretty concisely throughout. In The Deep End, the biggest change is that it's a son, not a daughter, who is having an illicit affair, and it's with a man. So the mother is also there not only to sort of maintain the family, but also to suppress the homosexuality of her son from getting out and making his own struggle any harder.
But anyway, it's a good one, and this Blu-ray is the first Blu-ray release for this movie, and prior to that, I don't know that it had a great home video history. I had a Regent 2 DVD, but I don't know if it may have had a stateside DVD, but this Blu-ray is the way to go if you want to get it. It looks great, and Indicator always does right by their extras. There's a bunch more stuff on here that I haven't covered, but really good disc and good for November. That's The Reckless Moment.
Excellent. Very, very cool.
So that is... Go ahead.
I was going to say exactly that. That was quite a selection of discs.
Yes, as usual. Very good stuff. And I really appreciate you coming up with such a great group, you know, in a short amount of time, I would think. You did a really great job. So thank you so much, Rob,
for jumping on this episode. Always a pleasure. And we're gearing up. We actually started this segment in January of this year. So we are slowly inching up to a full year of new arrivals on Just the Discs, which is kind of amazing.
It.
Yeah.
I love that.
So maybe we'll do something special for December. I don't know.
That sounds good. That sounds good. Let's think about it. We'll talk about it.
Cool.
But everybody have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week. Thank you so much, Rob. We will see you in December.
Great.
Bye-bye.